San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB Studios here in beautiful Kearny Mesa. We're being heard with 50,000 watts of power, not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour, my co-host. He is a marathon runner. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a family office expert and advisor to many high net worth families. And you can read all about him and our show on iymoney.com. And his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you on this Sunday night before President's Day?
Joe, I'm doing great.
Good.
I'm glad to be here. I'm still laughing. I'll tell you why later.
Well, we had quite a week. Why don't we just
Actually, we need to start with Wednesday. We were thinking about starting with Thursday, but we should start about my dinner on Wednesday.
I think we should. Why don't you talk about
Okay, so for dinner at my erudite dinner gathering Wednesday evening, we hosted about 22 people, where, including one of our recent guests, Wendy Gillespie, the co-producer of Allegiance,
Great play,
the largest grossing play in the history of the old globe. But our speaker was Sam Mehara. Mr. Mehara is retired rocket scientist from Boeing, who spent 3 years of his life when he was 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13. That's about 4 years. In a Japanese-American internment camp.
Heart Mountain in Arkansas.
Heart Mountain in actually Wyoming.
Oh, Wyoming, excuse me. Yes.
So he did a presentation about that experience, which was fascinating presentation. Again, I hosted about 22 people, and it really raised a lot of, a lot of food for thought and questions.
And this guy's 80 years old, looked about, 55, 50, 60?
Yeah, he looked 55 or 60, moved around faster than I did.
Maybe I need to get interned for a while and lose some weight.
So it was a fascinating presentation. The cool thing was he saved the surprise for last, that iconic photograph of the two young Japanese girls in school doing the Pledge of Allegiance. He ended up marrying one of those two, Helene, but he didn't know her in the internment camp, met later in San Francisco.
Yeah.
But he saved that surprise until last. So that was really fun. Mm-hmm. And then the next night, Thursday night, which was Valentine's Day, you and me went out on a date, right, Joe?
Well, not really. With your wife and your daughter and Luann and Harrison joined
us. Yeah, one of our other recent guests, Harrison Howard, whose father, Wing, painted all of the great murals at La Valencia in the Wedding Barn, and Harrison himself is a great artist, as well as his lovely wife, Luann.
And Thursday night was the last night the Wedding Barn would be open, right?
It was, exactly. And why is that, Joe?
Well, they're closing down. They're going to remodel, upgrade, and innovate and renovate, and I think it's going to be beautiful when they get finished. Of course, a lot of people are reluctant to change, but, we should always look forward to some positive things and change. You know, I kind of analogize it to Horton Plaza. I wasn't too thrilled when Horton Plaza first went in, but if you ask anybody today, would you like to remove Horton Plaza and restore it to the way it was with porn shops and tattoo parlors, I don't think we'd want to do that. So, we always have to look for improvement, right?
I think we do, and I think what they're going to do with the Wedding Bar and Café La Rue is going to be really neat, as long as they don't lose our little plaque that commemorates where Dr. Seuss sat in booth number 3 of the Wedding Bar, even though booth 3 won't be there anymore, technically.
I think they're taking the booths out, but I think they're also going to commission Audrey Geisel's daughter, Lark, who's a renowned artist and sculptor. As a matter of fact, she did the famous sculpture that's up at the UCSD Geisel Library outside of Dr. Seuss and the Cat in the Hat. And I think it's just about life size. It's an amazing piece if you've never seen it. But they're going to commission her to create two more plaques for the La Valencia. So I think the plaques will be even bigger and better and contain the same essential messaging that was in the one I wrote. So
I think so, and I think change is good. Mm-hmm. So the reason I'm still laughing is because my wife and I went out to Valentine's Day with a group of people. We thought we should go out and do something ourselves. So Saturday evening, we cruised on up to Pala Indian Reservation because we had two tickets to see not only one of our recent guests, but also Debbie Reynolds, who I wasn't aware as to how prolific her acting and singing career was. But then the star of that evening, Saturday night, the reason I'm still laughing, was the one and only Mr. Don Rickles.
Yeah, now, how did it go? Was he the headliner, or was he...
He was the headliner. So okay. Debbie Reynolds came on first for about 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. She's 80 years old, and she can still sing.
Wow.
And then she did some funny stand-up about some of the movies that she did while singing some songs and just entertaining the crowd and getting us warmed up for Don Rickles. And then, he's 86 years old. He was out there for about 75 minutes. I didn't realize how well he can still sing.
Are you kidding?
He sang about three songs, and he was amazing.
What did he sing?
You know, I can't, he sang the song about, you know, me being me.
Oh.
Just an amazing voice. I mean, his energy is incredible. 86 years of age, and yeah. I can't repeat most of his jokes on the air, unfortunately.
And he said during our interview he does about 20 or 30 shows a year now. So.
Yeah, he's doing a couple
yeah.
a month,
yeah.
and it was really amazing. And he offended everybody, and again, I can't repeat very much on the air, but he also mentioned that he's only doing this for fun.
Uh-huh.
And he, you know, he made sure it was clear with the audience that he wasn't seriously insulting anybody.
Yeah.
And didn't get to go backstage because he had to take off. He said he was thinking about spending the night, but he decided to go back to the United States of America instead Saturday
evening.
Well,
you should have. Yeah. Next time we'll try and get insulted in person because over the air it was great, but face-to-face it would have been something.
Better. He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
So he's doing this routine where the guy playing the piano goes on way, way too long, right? And so then there's dead silence as Rickle stares at the piano player. And he says, hey, pal, do you see your name in lights up on that marquee?
It's funny.
He's so good. Yeah. So it was a blast. So yeah. I'm still laughing.
Yeah. One other thing, though. I flipped the channel the other night, and here I see baseball, USD playing SDSU.
Yeah, Fowler Park opened.
Yeah, boy, what a nice-looking ballpark.
Yeah.
Did they play just two games or three?
They had a game today, too. I don't know who won today. I know San Diego State won Friday and Saturday.
Right.
And I don't know who won today, but I believe there was a game scheduled today.
Well, maybe we'd find that out after the break. But anyway, should we get into the show tonight?
Oh, why not?
Yeah.
Who do we have as our special guest?
Well,
he was giving things away to us, so
yeah.
I like him already.
Well, I have a fellow here who is the publisher and editor of the biggest newspaper in town, and we'll explain. It's not Doug Manchester. So.
Yeah, because you said the biggest newspaper.
But
Manchester's
anyway.
Paper blows away in the morning breeze.
Yeah, but anyway, our guest tonight, and he's been a friend for many years, I have to tell you, and he's been doing this for about 30 years and catering to the cafe society and the coffee shop industry and the coffee industry with some great great publication that has news, views, commentary, arts, food, culture, everything, and his name is John Rippo. So, John, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Look, your paper is, I'm going to read your principles of the espresso, because these are in every issue. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is.
So
Ever since day one.
If you go through, and this is for 30 years, folks, and this is what the espresso aspires to. They will provide, or John says, actually, I will provide a watch on the media and a watch on the holders and users of power in society and promote civil liberties and justice. Respect diversity and promote tolerance, promote individual initiative and action, speak accurately, honestly, clearly, and directly, and respect my reader. And signed, John A. Rippo, publisher. So where'd you come up with that?
I came up with that at a night in Java Coffee House at 9th and G in, not quite 30 years ago, Joe. It was in 1990. Mm-hmm. It was just around the time of the first Gulf War. And some friends and I were sitting at a table with very long faces, thinking about all of our friends who were going to get shipped off to this war, guys who had gone to school and taken Uncle Sam's dime to be in the reserves to pay for their education. And we thought that it was going to be all over for our friends. And we started talking about media and the problems of media, the problems we felt that media had. And at the end of the night, I decided, well, it's time to go do something else. So about a year later, almost a year later, the first issue of the Espresso went out to, I think, 75, 6, 7 coffee houses in San Diego County. Originally, it was something I did every 2 weeks, and it stabilized to a monthly format in the late 90s. And I've been doing it ever since. So this issue is 21 years. 21 years.
So yeah. So the media ills that you somewhat allude to in your principles, they've gotten worse in the last 20 years or better?
Yes.
Okay. Good to know. Who do you think you are, Don Rickles? Come on, man.
I suppose you want some detail about that,
why,
too. Yeah.
Why should I tell you?
Next question. Joe, let him answer the question.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
come on. Yeah, better or both?
Yeah, both.
Okay.
Both.
How so?
Let me back up a bit. In 1991, we perceived, it was a very brutal perception, that there was a lot going on with respect to the coming first Gulf War that we weren't hearing in American media. We had to hear it from the BBC or the CBC or, you know, foreign media, whatever was going on. And we were very concerned at the time, and we thought, you know, why aren't we getting better stuff? Mm-hmm. And this led to another long round of far too much caffeine in the late into the evening, and we settled that problem. And at the end of the evening, it was myself and two other people decided, well, let's try something different. And it has been a wild time. It's been a wonderful time with some wonderful victories, some bad defeats. I mean, in short, it has been life. Mm-hmm. And I've learned a lot along the way, and I wouldn't have traded it for anything. And it's been a wonderful learning.
And you've got quite a few contributors. How many contributors do you have?
Many, and they have been varied. Yeah. Gore Vidal sent me something once.
Huh.
We had an interview just before he died with Howard Zinn, the historian.
Really? Wow.
I should have these names right on the tip of my tongue, and my mind is a complete blank. But I've been very blessed over the years with a number of people who have come out of everywhere to contribute something to the Espresso.
Yeah, and, like Dave Good and people like that have really written.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, a lot of notables.
Lou Curtis.
Yes.
Lou Curtis has contributed several pieces on the history of music and the history of music and coffee houses here in San Diego in days gone by, you know, 60s and the early 70s on.
Yeah. Justin, why don't we take our little break now, and then we'll come back and get into the size of your paper and your origins a little bit more and then some. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life. We are back with more of our show. Boy, that's majestic music, isn't it, Richard? Hey, let's get into the last page of this current issue of the Espresso and the article on there, Richard.
Yeah, it says last call for the Whaling Bar at the La Valencia Hotel. We, of course, were there, but we were talking about something funny that was met. Well, Joe, tell the story.
Well, first let me just correct the record, because I think there's a crosstown station that did a piece on the Whaling Bar closing. And Wing Howard was the artist who did the mural and actually all the paintings that hang in the Whaling Bar and Cafe LaRue. And, of course, when they update the room and remodel, when it reopens, they're going to bring some of the paintings from inside the hotel down into the restaurant, Richard, so which is kind of cool. And they're going to remove the Whaling Bar mural and make it a big open bar. Open bar, that's that gets everybody's attention. But it's going to serve the entire space there in the restaurant and bar. But the Crosstown Station reported that Wing Howard, the artist, essentially worked for drinks or something. And we've had Harrison Howard, his son, on this show. And the actual fact, and of course, he had dinner with us Wednesday night, courtesy of Richard. Thank you. Or excuse me, Thursday night. And his father, Wing, actually had a studio at the La Valencia, and was, I guess the initial thought was that he would create murals, you know, change them out from time every 6 months or whatever the period was. But, you know, alcohol very little bit to do with it. So I just wanted
some of his remuneration was in the form of studio space.
Correct.
But not in the form of free drinks.
Right. Which isn't to say, you know, everyone hasn't enjoyed a martini or a whaler or whatever at the Whaling Bar. So, but anyway.
But just for the sake of clarity.
Yes.
So, John Rippo,
where
did you come from, and why are you here?
Yeah, what are you doing here?
Yeah, like why am I here?
Stockdale, where am I here?
Now, I was born in San Diego, raised in San Diego, and lived my life in San Diego.
Which hospital?
Mercy.
There you go.
Yeah, Mercy. So, and the Whaling Bar. I love the Whaling Bar.
Mm-hmm.
So, public schools?
No. No.
Private schools?
Catholic school.
Okay.
Catholic,
which one? St. Augustine?
No. St. Vincent's and then, God.
In Mission Hills, right?
I try to forget that, actually.
Okay.
But no, I went to USD, University of San Diego.
Two alumni.
Nice. What graduated what year?
83.
Oh, wow. I was 1980, so I was just in front of you.
Yeah.
Small school back then.
Very small. Half of it didn't exist.
Exactly. And the basketball team still stinks 33 years later.
Well, they're a small school, Richard, but a beautiful school.
It's their guards are like 5'7" and 6 feet tall. That makes them a small school. Oh, wait a minute. You meant in terms of student population.
Hey, their football coach played, you know, coached this team in the Super Bowl this year. So, you know, what the heck?
True. Is that true? Really?
You know?
Jim Harbaugh coached football at University of San Diego before he went on to Stanford and then to the San Francisco 49ers.
So,
Jim, next time it's first and goal at the 5, try to run, okay? Run the ball. I'm sorry, Jim.
But anyway, so we're going to get it. So, and what high school? Where'd you go to high school?
Parker High.
Parker High. Francis Parker?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Your knuckles are pretty bruised still, I'll bet, huh? From the nuns wrapping them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. those stories are true, Joe.
So we were talking.
Dangerous place.
Yeah. Dangerous places, right? We were talking about the size of the newspaper. It's approximately 15 and a half inches by 21 inches, right?
Yeah, it's a very large page. And the reason it's a very large page is when I started this newspaper, I didn't want it to be a tabloid for a lot of reasons. And actually, you save money the fewer times you fold a page. And I needed to do that. So it also needed to be its own marketing tool. So the huge masthead was hard to miss.
Mm-hmm.
And people started picking it up. I mean, maybe they thought it was a doormat originally. I don't know. But it worked well. It always has worked well. And I can't change it. I've tried to change it several times, but my brain does not work that way at a smaller size anymore. So it is what it is, and it's going to stay that way. And it fits.
And the website, theespresso.com, I guess that's in the process of getting updated as well?
Or? Yes. Okay. Yes. They should be doing it right now, I hope.
But at least people can reach you there through it with stories and ideas and things, right?
Please.
So your circulation is what, 420 coffee houses?
There are 428 independent coffee houses in San Diego County, something like 22... it's over 2,200 total spots where the paper goes, primarily hospitality locations, restaurants, lounges, breweries, hookah lounges, all these kinds of places where people are going to go and sit and relax and absorb information while they do it, which is what I want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So keeps them occupied, keeps me happy, and a lot of places for it to be found. But it's a special kind of niche. Approach.
Yeah. Well, it's great. I mean, and you can't miss it. So next time you're out at your local coffee house, independent coffee house. Now these don't go into the chains, I take it, right?
No, the chains, Starbucks. Okay. Starbucks.
The S word.
Yeah, the S word. They tend not to take publications except on a case by case basis, and the case changes. So. We don't go there, but there are plenty of other places for it to go to.
So who was the first coffee house to carry it?
The first coffee house to carry it was Java.
Okay.
And the first two places I ever brought it to was Java, which is now long gone, long missed.
Right.
And another fine place in Hillcrest that was called Kelfromage, which was my second home.
Oh, yeah. I remember Kelfromage. I used to go to, they had the best quiche. I know real men don't eat quiche, but I did.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
Right there on Washington, and I think Goldfinch, if memory serves.
No, University.
No, you're thinking of Perrette's.
I'm thinking of Perrette's. Yeah, oh, okay, yeah. No, Kelfromage.
Kelfromage was on University.
University, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Between 5th and 6th.
Well, Perrette's was great, too. They were both great. I used to go to both places with great frequency when I had an office in Hillcrest back in, gee whiz, the early and mid-'80s.
Yeah. Well, that was it. So, but they've had it all these years, and now all these other places have popped up. It's been a wonderful change and a growth of culture, on a small scale.
Well, it kind of reminds me of what's going on in the microbrewery industry. I mean, we have 72 microbreweries here now.
All of a sudden, isn't that amazing?
You know, so
with more coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently,
is it 72?
That's what Mayor Sanders told us, and I think he's an authority on the topic now. So I'll take his word for it. But, he's calling it the year of the beer and everything else. And apparently the company that makes the special yeast that goes into most of these beers is anchored here. And that kind of triggered a lot of the growth of that industry.
So. There is there's one of the breweries that makes a beer called Victory at Sea Beer, and they got coffee from a local coffee roaster. And they provided me with a very generous sample, but they neglected to tell me it's a 14% beer.
Really?
So I went to the brewery. I talked with them. I had a great time. I bent my arm, had a pint of beer, and I couldn't get off the stool because, pint of 14%. I'm not used to that. I'm used to drinking caffeine, not beer.
So maybe they want you to do a publication for them as well.
I'm going to have to. Going to have to do something. It's too big a market. But it's a great growth, and San Diego actually has created its own niche in coffee houses. It has mm-hmm. a unique kind of taste, a unique kind of flavor, and a unique approach. Not everybody, of course, in coffee respects that, but San Diego has shaped its own way in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of reasons for that. One, we're very close to Mexico. There's been a lot of crossover, a lot of flavor crossover. San Diego is one of the first places where you can could find in some places a blend of coffee and horchata, mm-hmm. which some people really go for.
A lot of Mexican chocolate in a lot of
a whole different kinds of things about mm-hmm. Mexican chocolate drinks and flavors. And there's also another growth, if you will, in San Diego's cafe scene, and that's because you have all these other cultures here, and they all contribute to it.
Mm-hmm.
Places that, you know, small restaurants that roast their own beans, they blend them with different kinds of spices from their homelands, and they create things, and it's beginning to...
Give me a couple examples, because that sounds tasty.
Well, what is a good example? Yeah. There was a small restaurant in National City, little tiny mom and pop restaurant. I'm blanking on the name, but I think it's Eritrean.
Mm-hmm.
And they roast the coffee there for you. They grind it. They blend it with two different kinds of peppers.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Peppers.
Yeah.
Wow. And this goes into coffee and pepper. Who would ever have thought of that? But it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yeah. Let me check in with Justin. Are we coming up on our break yet? Yeah, there's our break. I thought we were. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be back with more of John Ripple and the Espresso right after these words. All right. We are back with Richard Muccio, myself, Joe Vecchio, and our guest, John Ripple of the Espresso. Now time for Richard to thank some sponsors.
Thank you, sponsors. Those sponsors would include... our major sponsor, UBS, with Mr. Michael Quaranta and Drew Freitas. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We couldn't do it without you. San Diego's best business bank, Regions Bank, with San Diego's most influential business banker, Sean Puckett. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Polito Epic CPAs in Vista. Is it tax season yet, you guys? You've been really quiet, it must be. Rich Gaines, the county's best estate planning attorney with Family Legacy Legal. My buddy Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited, who called in sick for Wednesday evening's erudite dinner. I hope you're feeling better, Carl. And if you aren't, get better soon, because I know there's a lot of weird stuff going around. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives. If you're trying to improve your cash flow as a real estate owner, Joel can help you. And our new daddy, father of Quinn, Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics. And Jason's got a great event coming up on February 28th. We have a post up on our website, www.iymoney.com, seminar for owners of businesses who are looking to improve the skills of the services they're getting from their CFOs. So check that out on our website. Again, Feb 28th, Jason Kruger Seminar. Should be good stuff. And Joe, how can people get a hold of our sponsors?
Well, they can check out that information for Jason and learn all about our sponsors and get their contact info at iymoney.com. iymoney.com. Get over there. There's a lot of great information there. And Richard, speaking of other great events, I guess March 2nd, you're going to run, and I'm going to try to run the Nathan with Team Fletcher.
Nathan Fletcher Racing Team.
Yes, so one of our former guests.
Finish Chelsea's run.
Right.
Saturday morning, March 2, Balboa Park. We're all on the same team. Everybody's going to be out there with me, Mary, Demi, me, you, a bunch of people. So the pressure's on, Joe. Just kidding.
No, it's a very good cause, though, and come on out and meet Nathan Fletcher and everybody and support, and all the other teams as well, but it's for a very good cause.
Yeah, it's for a great cause.
But anyway, back to our guest with John Ripple here. Where would we leave off, Richard?
Well, we left off talking about how big the newspaper is, but I want to talk about a big story that came out here in San Diego last week, John. That would be our former mayor, one of our former mayors, Maureen O'Connor, and how she was spending some of her free time, which apparently turned out to be not too free.
Wasn't it a little confusing, though, Richard, on the headlines,
like she lost $1 billion.
Well, actually, she was up $1 billion and then apparently lost that and has a net
loss. But on a net basis, I think she lost $13 million, which I was thinking, if you bet $1 billion and only lose $13 million, I'm a CPA, so I can do this in my head. That's only a minus 1.3%. She actually did pretty well.
Yeah, but to think she was up by $1 billion.
But I think taking $2 million out of her deceased husband's private foundation, Well, that's probably not a good thing to do. So, John, what are your thoughts on this rather interesting piece of news that came out last week?
I feel very bad for Maureen O'Connor. I'm very slightly acquainted with her, but I have friends who do this same kind of thing, although on a smaller scale, and it's just terrifying to watch. So I stay away from casinos, and I don't lose $1 billion, so yeah. I'm very happy about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure she was spending a lot of time in casinos. A lot of that, I think, was on internet gambling, which is even worse.
Video poker. I mean, if you can't believe that that's not rigged, then, you know, you better bet on professional wrestling or something. So
it's rigged, really? No.
I mean, the computer is not going to let the house lose, for God's sake. You know, it's just like
It's a sad story. Yeah. You know, I'll tell you something. You know, I don't gamble, and I'd never been to a casino before or one of the Indian casinos, and, of course, the Rickles show was up at Pala. I was amazed at how many people are in this place just spending their days in front of these blinking lights gambling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah.
It's scary. I mean, it really is scary.
Yeah.
It's just really scary.
If you walk by the slot machines, you see people actually clipped to the machines. There's some strange reason for that, but they clip themselves to the machines with a wire, and you get some sort of points or bennies or free coffee or something. I don't know why. It's terrifying to see.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I don't know. As I said, I've never been. I'm only going back if there's a good show because I don't gamble. But no. It was really sort of spooky. And they let people smoke in there. Oh.
Well, let's, you know, look, if you folks have friends or relatives that you think have a problem, you'll try to get them some help because
absolutely.
You don't want to wind up like Maureen O'Connor.
And hopefully this news about Maureen will help some people sort of do some introspection and realize that maybe they should take some steps to make some changes in their life.
Yeah, let's go back to the front page, though, Richard. He's got a headline story, Prescriptions for Murder. John, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Prescriptions for Murder deals with the levels of prescription drugs and the kinds of prescription drugs that are prescribed to people who have turned up in the news as mass shooters. Mm-hmm. People like Adam Lanza, who was prescribed Fanapt, which I believe is an anti-schizophrenic prescription.
Mm-hmm.
There is one here that kind of the jewel line of the entire piece, if I say so myself. It regards Effexor, an antidepressant that its manufacturer admits can cause homicidal ideation as a rare adverse event in those whom it is prescribed to. And obviously there is a connection here. There, mm-hmm. Shooter after shooter have been people who have been prescribed very serious drugs for very serious conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And the nasty pattern is that far too many of them pick up a gun and start shooting. So that was the gist of the front page story, and what that may mean for the rest of us.
Now, how did you come upon this information, John? Did you just research and
I did some research on my own. There were some other people who had some input into that,
mm-hmm.
but pieces coming together, just looking up. Looking up who was prescribed what over periods of time. And it's really kind of surprising. I mean, this goes back all the way to I think the 80s with one or two of these people. I think it was James Huberty who was prescribed I'm sorry, this microphone causes immediate Alzheimer's when you look at it. But that's what happens when you get on radio,
I remember
people.
Newspaper man on radio, yeah, the pressure's on.
The microphone eats your brain.
you can't go back and change that sentence.
No, I can't.
And you can't take anything for it either.
obviously not. But to answer the question, there are these things which are very grim. Create very grim patterns.
So do you think the NRA, which in my mind stands for not relevant anymore, do you think the NRA is ever going to come on board to modern thinking about this issue?
Well, I would hope so if they want to stay in business.
Well, I would say, you know, I'm not a professional in this regard, a mental health professional, but I think if you take a troubled youth, couple that with these psychoactive meds and a heavy dose of these violent, bloody, awful video games, you're going to have a prescription for trouble right there, I would say, wouldn't you? Because some of these kids really get into these games. Have you seen some of these, Richard? I mean, these...
No, you know, my son's 21. He played a few video games when he was younger, but...
I know we all go through these phases and this and that, but I mean,
he doesn't really do that anymore, so the stuff I saw was a long, long time ago, and it wasn't that bad. I think, obviously, the proclivity of mass weapons of killing, like Uzis and so on. I mean, the ability for people to get their hands on these rapid fire. I mean, nobody needs these kinds of weapons to protect themselves in their house. Maybe if you're, you know, hunting herds of elephants, but it's ridiculous how easy it is for people to get a hold of weapons that can fire multitudes of rounds.
And then some of these movies out there. I mean, I've been to some movies recently, like Life of Pi. You come out of there, you realize, or Moonrise Kingdom. You come out and say, hey, that was a great film, and nobody got shot. I didn't see a gun or any gunfire.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, back in the 50s and 60s, movies were very violent. Nobody really commented about it.
That's true, but I think everything's more extreme now. You know, we can do things in such a more larger scale.
I would agree with that. I mean, when I've gone to various arcades, you know, you mentioned casinos a moment ago. I've gone to various arcades and watched people at shooting gallery videos. Those things are horrific.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, large screen people falling over. It's the same kind of thing that the military uses to train soldiers. And what that does is it coarsens people's sensibilities at a young age.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you need to do to get them...
I mean, target practice with, dots and circles, I mean, that's one thing. But when you have human figures up there, and... I mean, look at this kid in Adam Ladd's. I mean, his mother had she brought him to the shooting range, apparently, right? I mean...
Yeah, she did.
So
she did.
Anyway, but... So these are kinds of things that you come up with. There was another one here. What's this short history of the Middle East? What was that when I saw that headline?
I love that headline because there's no such thing as a short history of the Middle East. So explain, please.
Actually, that is a...
a swift and elegant trip through Mideast history.
But okay.
That's a that's the headline for a book that we reviewed called The Middle East. It's written by Ernest Tucker, who is a history prof at Annapolis, among other things.
Hmm.
And I got his book some time ago. It was a wonderful short compendium that was very clear on the history of the Mideast from, I don't know, the Stone Age up to the present day.
Wow.
And it was a great read. It was a well done book. And it's the same. I think it's the same textbook that is used by people at Annapolis. So this is what they are being given. And it certainly made things a lot clearer for me. So
and if you can crystallize some of his main... we have to take a break. Well, let's crystallize when we come back. Folks, we'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after these words. All right, we're back with the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life. And we're just going to wrap up here with John Rippo of The Espresso. And maybe one or two thoughts about the Mideast. And then we'll talk about Paul Krasner and a few other things from this publication.
Well, the Mideast is just insanely complex, and one of the reasons why, there are many reasons for why it is insanely complex, all of which are illustrated in this book, which I can't even begin to get into because it's like unraveling a ball of string, and who has that kind of time?
So let's not. Let's talk about restaurant menus. Yeah.
Okay.
How was that for a segue?
Yeah, yeah. Going from page 6 to page 7.
I am going from page 6 to page 7. Tell us about restaurant menus.
Restaurant menus. I there's a story about when menus mattered in my paper on its trade page, Cafe Scene. And the reason why that is there is because these beautiful menus helped identify these places, and I have long been after the coffee houses to individuate further, to mark out their territory, to introduce themselves as the greatest places on earth where their public needs to be, and insulate themselves more perfectly from things like the Mighty Mermaid of Coffee as a way to survive and prosper. And I came across this collection of menus and urged them towards some different ways of being. If I say so myself, it's a good looking collection of menus. If this was television, we couldn't put the main picture on screen. So. How cool is that?
That is cool.
Is there a booklet of these, or are you just publishing these in your paper?
They came from various sources. Mm-hmm. They came from various sources.
But there's not a book of these covers, though.
Not that I know.
It would be a nice coffee table book, you know.
It should be. It should be.
I, by the way, took a menu from La Valencia.
Yes, you did.
For its last night, the regular menu, as well as the Valentine's Day menu, to save for posterity.
Yes, I have one also.
Good.
Now, backing up to page six, Paul Krasner, you were talking about him at the break, and what an interesting character and his book. So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes. We had a book review of Confessions of a Raving Unconfined Nut, which is Paul Krasner's memoir, which he got the rights back to, and he reissued with a couple of additional chapters.
With the subtitle, Misadventures in the Counterculture. So.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. And Krasner is, he was the publisher of a magazine called The Realist for nearly 40 years. It was a satirical magazine. It was very well done. He is the last of the old line hippies left alive and standing. He knew Abbie Hoffman and Joan Baez and Jerry Rubin and everybody else who was anybody in that
Tim
time.
Tim Leary, Mort yeah. Saul, William Kunstler, I see here.
Everybody.
Wow. The Merry Pranksters.
The Merry Pranksters,
so
yeah.
Was he a member of the Students for Democratic SDS and all that?
You know, I don't know. I don't think he was. I think he wrote about them, but I don't think he was one of them. Huh. And
but you've been in touch with this guy?
Yeah, I've been in touch with him. He's 80 years old. he's a marvelous personality. He's still sharp and wicked and very, very funny. And I need to get more from Paul in the paper because he's a brilliant guy. But his book is a long memoir of a life well spent in counterculture.
Is he based up in Haight-Ashbury area?
No, I think he's in New York now.
New York?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What else in this issue, Richard, that we should get into?
Well, I want to ask John a question. What's the espresso going to look like in 10 years?
I hope with a lot more pages and with a far happier publisher and editor in chief, who's causing a lot more discomfort of the people who need to be discomforted, and bringing comfort to those who need it.
Yeah. Well, you've got it looks like at least 2, 4, 5 contributors, 2 artists. Katya, we should probably mention, right?
Yes, Katya.
Hey, and if you need to reach John, his email is simply editor@theespresso.com. And that's 2 E's, T-H-E-E, et cetera, et cetera.
So, John, what's your favorite story that's ever appeared in your periodical? If you could, is there one or not?
Yeah, there is.
What is
it? There is. It came from the very first year of the paper's operation. And when I started the paper, it was just me alone. And I was the paper boy. I was downtown late one night, putting papers in doorways, 1 o'clock in the morning. And a very little tiny girl came walking down E Street toward me alone, middle of the night. And a little kid walking down the street. So I tried to get a cop. I got a cop and I said, we need to find who this kid belongs to. And in the...
Say a little like what, 7, 8 years old?
Or? It turned out she was something like 19 months old.
Oh,
she was a toddler. She was
toddler, okay.
You know, barefoot on the street by herself. So, you know, the cops came. They did what they were going to do. I took a picture of this little girl. And I called the printing house that I had just come from and spent all my money printing this thing. And I said, look, I need a favor. I'm going to mock up a front page of the Espresso with this kid's picture on it. Would you print them? And I'll pay you later. So by 3 o'clock in the morning, I was all the way back in Poway where this printer was with a mocked up front page with a headline that ran across 6 columns. Who knows this little girl? They printed that for me free on them. 5,000 copies, which was the same number that I was printing in those days. And I went back downtown 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the morning, and I started putting those things up until almost 7 a.m.
About 30 seconds, John.
And anyway, we found the girl. We found the girl's parents.
Wow.
That page found the girl's parents.
Huh.
So of all the stories that I've got, there's nothing that really tops that. I mean, the Espresso helped find a lost child's parents.
You see, the news
amazing.
The news does great things, as does this show, Rich, John. I hope our show reinvigorates your faith in media. Thank you for being our guest, Richard.
Thank you.
Richard, thanks for being here, and we're going to see you next week. Justin Hart on the board, thank you very much. Thanks to Craig Blank, our con executive, and our programming genius, Dave Sniff. Of course, Dave
yes.
Sniff. Get ready for baseball, everybody, and enjoy President's Day off. We'll see you next week. Good night now. Stay well.
Thank you. That was fun. That was fun.
Thank you. I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story of how SelectQuote goes to bat for you buying term life insurance. A while back, a man called me who had had prostate cancer. He asked if I could beat a very high quote another life insurance agent had given him. I said, let me see. Well, I took his pertinent information, then shopped the highly rated, price-competitive companies we represent, and found one who pre-approved him for a premium way below what he had been quoted. When it comes to term life insurance, no other company touches SelectQuote's experience and expertise in finding the right policy at the right price for almost anyone. How about you?
For your free quote, call 1-800-949-1733. That's 1-800-949-1733. 1-800-949-1733. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop. You save.
We follow the story.
Why would we make deeper cuts just to protect tax breaks?
Then we lead the conversation.
More government isn't going to help you get ahead.
Follow the leader. 760 KF.